I thought you were from the Western Isles, so I figured we would be talking about like the woes of growing up in Cromore or something, but you're from
Right.
Glasgow, so.
Yeah. I've just found myself thinking there, oh, I wonder if I told her I was from the Western Isles as if I would have done that.
Have you ever been there, or have you always lived in Glasgow?
No, I've always lived in Glasgow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've not lived anywhere else. I've visited places and had family that stayed up north and stuff, but I've got friends from Orkney.
All right. Yeah.
But no, I've always lived in Glasgow.
Never been to Orkney actually, despite the fact that it's about 20 minutes away, I think, on the
Is
ferry.
it?
Yeah, it's quite nearby.
Yeah.
My landlord's actually from Orkney, but
Right.
I've never been there.
You
So
don't sound like
you,
you're from the Western Isles.
I know I've got quite, like everyone I know from home, basically, who's of my age, doesn't really have a Western Isles accent. Like my boyfriend's
Really?
got a really strong English accent. One of my friends is meant to be coming in on Monday to do this, and she's got almost a Geordie accent.
Really?
Because her mother's accent never sort of loosened the time that she's been in Lewis.
That's strange
So.
because the people that I know from Orkney, the same could be said of them. But
Yeah.
I know, say, five or six people from Orkney and they've all got different accents. One of my friends just sounds Welsh.
Yeah.
But it's strange because on the one hand, you think, well, that's a really thick Welsh accent, but it could almost pass for just a really, really heavy Orcadian accent.
Yeah.
But it's strange. It's like you wouldn't think that they would be so similar, but his dad's Welsh.
I think the Lewis accent is like what most people think of as a classic Lewis accent is actually the accent of someone who's learnt Gaelic from a
Yeah.
young child and then learnt English. And because there are so many people now who don't do that and who only ever speak English exclusively, then maybe what people think of as the Western Isles accent is kind of dying out.
Yeah.
But you don't have a sort of really pronounced Glasgow accent
No,
either.
I don't. I think probably similarly, I've got my mother's accent, but she's Glaswegian as well. But
Yeah.
I think the way my cousin's girlfriend, who's from Manchester, she says that all the women in our family have posh Glasgow accents.
You think?
But I don't think it's posh. It's just like I grew up in Govan.
Yeah.
I definitely don't have a Govanite accent, but
No.
I think that's probably because I grew up in a pretty rough part of it,
Yeah.
so I didn't really go out that much and
Yeah,
like
so
sort of
you're more
socialise with,
confined to like a family circle.
yeah, it would have been more. My accent's probably more influenced by my mum than my peers.
Yeah.
So,
So do you still live in Govan?
no, I live in Maryhill.
All right.
Well, it's don't know if it's technically Maryhill. It's just beside Rockhill Park. Do you know where the student village is at
Murrano
Murano
Street,
Street?
yeah.
Yeah, I live on that street.
All right, but you don't live
I
in
don't live in the
Murano
halls.
Street
No, I
itself.
stay with my dad.
No, I think you're kind of fortunate to have escaped Murano Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never stayed there, but like a lot of people from home were living there, and the year I went to third year now, the year I was in first year, it was quite bad with sort of heating problems and water problems and stuff like that. I was down in QM, which is kind of the nice halls. Like my friends would come down and say, "My shower's not working again," and just wash, which was less than ideal.
I have noticed that the fire brigade are there pretty much every tea
Every
time.
single day.
Every day at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, the fire alarms up there are like, I don't know, I remember someone telling me once that they're not like focused on one like flat. So if a fire alarm goes off anywhere on the floor, it goes off for like the
The whole
whole
building or the
floor.
whole.
So the fire brigade think that like there's a much bigger fire than there
Yeah,
actually is.
yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've been to this uni before. A few years ago. I stayed for less than a year though, and I was good friends with a girl that stayed on Murano Street.
Yeah. So are you a bit older then?
Yeah, I'm 26.
Right.
I came to uni straight from school
Yeah,
and
because when you said you were in first year, I thought, she doesn't look like she's 17.
no, I'm not. No, I tried it once before. I just wasn't quite ready for it.
Yeah.
With hindsight, it was all a bit overwhelming for me and I ended up dropping out.
Yeah. So did you
So
take a gap year the first time, or did you just come straight
I
from
came
school?
straight from school.
Yeah.
I was in a similar situation, I think, to a lot of my friends. It was just like a couple of months into the course, we just all looked at each other one day and it was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
You know? You just all of a
Super.
sudden find yourself here and it's just
Yeah.
sort of, you get carried along with the tides. I feel completely different about it this time and I'm actually doing pretty much the same course that I
Really?
started off
Yeah.
doing, with the exception of instead of doing English Lit, I'm doing English Language this time. I'm much happier
I was
about
so glad to get out of English Lit at the end of
it.
second year. I was absolutely desperate to get away from it by the end. I was just.
Honestly, I feel your pain.
It was
I really
really.
didn't enjoy it.
I really liked it in first year actually, and then in second year I was just doing my nut and desperate to get out of it. But I mean, everyone, like in Lewis, I don't think the gap year is like as much of a thing really. My boyfriend took one, but all of my friends and I came straight from school. We were all 17 when we got here. We all pretty much sailed through first year, and then second year we just found...
It's really, a shock to the system.
Yeah, the killing fields, basically. I'm the only one of my group of friends from school who is in third year now. Yeah. One of them is repeating second year because she just hated French so much and couldn't stand another 2 years. And another one's dropped out and gone home, so it's kind of... And I've heard medical students say that as well, that second year is absolutely the worst year.
Yeah.
And the one that really challenges them.
Well, my friends from school, our group had a similar situation when there was maybe, I think, five of us that came here together. We all came to Glasgow straight from school, and only one of us, my friend Lauren, she was the only one that stuck with it all the way through. She was the only one that graduated. I think myself, I dropped out, and obviously I've ended up back here now, and my friend Natalie, she just dropped out completely and is a civil servant. And my other friend Lucy, she ended up going to a different uni, just I think not because she particularly hated it here. I think it was just the same sort of situation as me. She just wasn't ready for it. Dropped out, took a while out, and she just decided to go back sooner than me. But,
so what did you do in the intervening period?
Well, I've done... I did 2 years of a course of in primary education at Strathclyde Uni. And I really enjoyed that. To be honest, probably the only reason I didn't complete it was because I got really sick in my second year and I ended up...
Right, so that wasn't your decision?
No, I missed the last half of my second year because I was in hospital, and I was going to have to take a year out. That was pretty much decided for me, just to catch up on everything. So my initial plan was to just take the year out and go back, but while I was in my year out, I started thinking, well, you know, if I get a qualification in teaching, you know, just a degree in teaching, then I have to be a teacher, no matter what.
You're quite constrained.
Whereas I thought, if I come here just to study something that I'm genuinely interested in, at least that way I've got a bit of expertise in something else, and then I can always do teaching as a postgrad, but that way I've got, you know, maybe another avenue open to me years down the line if I decide I need a change. So it's going to take much longer and everything, but I think it will be worth it in the long run.
It's funny you say that, actually, because that's what I think I'm probably going to do at PGC when I'm finished here. But I don't know, and like as you say, at least you've got the option. Whereas if you're qualified for teaching, then if you decide you want to do something else, you've effectively wasted the years you spent in teaching.
That's the thing. I mean, at least this way, if I do decide to do the change, I've already got qualifications and expertise in something else that I could follow up, rather than having to start something else completely from scratch.
You've got something to fall back on.
Yeah. So, but I'm hoping that maybe some of the courses I took at Strathclyde might help my situation here, because I know that you can get credit for some previous study. I've not yet been able to make an appointment with the chief advisor to talk about it. Well,
yeah, from Strathclyde I think it should be quite easy.
Yeah.
Because I know people who've... I know one girl who started anthropology at Edinburgh and dropped out, but she was able to transfer some of her anthropology credits across here, I think.
Yeah. I think it just depends, obviously, because different subjects. But I have studied things like English language and that in first year.
At Strathclyde?
I did that in first year at Strathclyde, but I would imagine that it's a different course structure, because obviously it's English language for teaching. So,
and don't they do more courses in first year at Strathclyde? Yeah. Maybe five, I think.
Well, again, I think that it's slightly different because of the primary education course is slightly different from the rest. So, you know, I was doing I can't actually remember how many individual subjects. You've got all the individual subjects that you're gonna have to teach, like religious and moral education, maths, language, art and design, and then you've got your sort of practical classes on top of that, your planning classes on lesson planning, and then you've got placements. It's really placement heavy as well, which made it quite difficult, because I have to work. If I don't work at least 3 shifts a week, then I starve. So
it's really
I just work in a pub down on Byers Road.
All right, which pub do you work in?
Bonhams.
Oh yeah, I haven't been there for ages because I can't afford it, but yeah, it's lovely.
It's actually reasonable for the West End in there.
It is reasonable for the West End, but there's reasonable for the West End and there's reasonable for student budgets.
Yeah, I know, totally.
But it's a nice place.
Yeah, it's nice. I've been in there for a few years. I worked there full time, probably about 4 years ago or something now. Probably just before I started my course at Strathclyde.
Yeah.
I've had, obviously in the years... over the years since I left school, I've worked full-time couple of times, enough, and I've continually worked part-time. Usually, even when I've been working full-time, I'll have a part-time job as well, just to try and get some money saved up. So I did not bad. I'm quite bad with money and really bad at saving, but I managed to save up the first part of my tuition fees before I came back to uni, because obviously since I've been funded before, back, I have to...
It's quite difficult.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. I have to pay my own fees for the next 3 years, so...
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, but again, the plan is that it's going to be worth it.
It's going to be worth it in the end.
Yeah, it's either that or pull pints for the rest of my life, and I don't really fancy that.
Yeah, which isn't...
Nah.
I don't know, in some ways the fee system doesn't seem all that fair, but then at least you're not in the English system where it's like three times as much every year.
It's true. Although I don't think that we should have to pay for our education per se. I think it's only fair enough. I mean, I shouldn't expect to get an unlimited funding, you know. I do kind of feel like, you know, well, it was my own choice or my own mistakes or whatever, so fair enough
that
I should have to pay.
Although, I mean, that should really be.
No, that just was just one of those things, I suppose.
Yeah.
The really annoying thing about it is that I was ill for a long time before I even went to uni, but it took so long to get diagnosed that it just was an ongoing thing and went into... Because it was... I had problems with my gallbladder, and because of my age, they just used to send me away. I got hospitalised one time and they sent me home with a bottle of Gaviscon. My doctor sent me up to the hospital to get an ultrasound because he suspected that it was my gallbladder, and I was sitting outside the room and I could hear the woman on the phone point blank refusing to do it. She was like, this patient's only 22, there's no way it can be this, clearly. So they sent me home with a bottle of Gaviscon and I ended up back 2 weeks later. So I suppose it's just one of those things that happens, eh?
Did you end up having your gallbladder removed?
Yeah, that's what happened sort of halfway through second year when I was at Strathclyde. I was in and out of hospital throughout my second placement. They were really, really good about it, but it was getting really, really bad at that time. Yeah. It was like really, really painful all the time. And I was in and out of hospital, and then I finally got properly diagnosed, and then I went and got scheduled for my surgery, I think, right in the middle of exams.
Oh no.
it was just like
perfect timing.
It was a disaster, but unavoidable.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing you could do about it.
Just glad it's over with.
It probably was one of the more unusual explanations they'd heard for not being able to take exams. Mm. Well, actually, I'm having a minor organ removed. I'm really sorry about that, but there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
I think the best one anyone from home ever came up with was one Christmas. A couple of guys kind of left it a bit late coming back to Glasgow, and then the ferries didn't sail and they got stranded.
Oh, dear.
And missed their January exams, which went down quite well with the department, but yeah.
Oh, no. It's one of these things that always happens just at the most inopportune moment.
Yeah, it's, you know, you never get ill during the summer holidays when, okay, it would be miserable, but you wouldn't, mm-hmm. you know, sort of miss out on anything that you couldn't reschedule or anything.
Oh, definitely. Just like, I was fit as a fiddle all year this year, and then about 2 days before term was starting, I started coming down with a cold, developing a really horrible cough, and I was like, this is just totally typical.
I don't know, I think the year I came to university first, everyone was talking about freshers flu and how all these people coming together from all over the country mm-hmm. and then like eating really badly and drinking a lot and going out all the time. Basically everyone got a little bit ill,
mm-hmm.
which I kind of escaped my first year. But one of my flatmates, because I lived in halls for 2 years, one of my flatmates was sort of just on her deathbed for about 6 weeks and really, really miserable.
Shame.
Which she put down to the fact that she was from quite a small village outside Aberdeen, and then she'd never been in a city before, and suddenly she was in this huge place, and like everyone else we were living with had been travelling and been in Cambodia and places, so she put it down to that, rightly or wrongly.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, I suppose there is kind of something in it.
I suppose the more remote the place you stay is, the less exposure you have to not particularly from Cambodian bugs, but you know, just everything that...
Well, she was going to tell everyone else.
Rupert, this is all your damn fault.
Which he didn't take too well to, and I'm sure it wasn't actually the case, but she put it down to just, like, all these new influences.
Mm-hmm. No, it is. It's really bad timing. It's because right at the very start of the term, especially if it's... was that in her first year?
Or yeah, it was her first year,
It's just, it's really important just to sort of ease yourself into it, and
you
know, before the pressure's on, to just sort of be able to just even just wander around and get to know the place and get to know people and stuff. It's actually, it's quite strange for me as well. I thought that this morning, because I've lived on Murano Street for 10 years.
Yeah.
And when I first came to uni here, back in 98, I knew people there, so I was always meeting people that I knew and stuff, but that hasn't happened for years and years now. And then it was like this morning, I was like seeing people that I knew from classes and saying hello to them and stuff. It's like, this is, it's just like totally different.
Yeah.
It's totally different living across from it when you're not involved with the uni. Then they're just a pain.
So it really does seem like that when you're not involved with it. It's more like a nuisance. And
yeah, well, they're just a bit... I get the impression that a lot of the students that are there, they think they're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, you
know,
it is
because it's a student village and it is quite big and everything, but they forget that, you know, they are like right in the middle of Rock Hill.
Yeah.
From just being a wee bit inconsiderate sometimes with the noise, because obviously there's a row of tenements across the road from it. My dad's is one of those, and there's two wee semi-detached houses right beside it as well, and it must be a pain for them too. But I've also seen them doing really silly things, like during the summer when it's really warm and they might be outside sunbathing, and you know, they're all lying in the grass and they've got like their stereos out and stuff, and like just like things lying about, which is fair enough. It's like being in their garden, but they'll wander off and leave
and
them.
It is Rock Hill.
Yeah, thinking again that they're in the middle of nowhere.
And it's
you get all the wee bands coming down from Rock Hill. Oh, they're all back. No. So, just a bit silly.
Yeah. I think especially people who've come up from England in particular and who maybe, like, I think if you live in Scotland, then you've heard of Mary Hill and you know that it's maybe, like, although it's quite a nice place, it's maybe somewhere you're slightly more careful. But if you don't have any kind of knowledge of Glasgow at all...
I suppose, yeah. I mean, it is a nice part of Mary Hill. It's a sort of... If you start going up Mary Hill Road away, towards the shopping centre, up there and beyond that, and at the back of Rock Hill Park and down Billsland Drive, then that's going down towards like actual Rock Hill and Postle Park and stuff. It's much worse. But I wouldn't leave my bag or my anything lying about anywhere, you know? You could be in the middle
not
of,
in the
like,
city. You wouldn't, just wouldn't do it. I mean, I know, because my boyfriend lives in Aberdeen and, like, he'll sometimes mention areas there that, like, aren't very good, and I've got no idea about them, but because he's been living there for a couple of years now. And just, you know, when you don't know a place, you should be kind of careful. I mean, we live on Care Drive, which is kind of near the Dumbarton Road.
Yeah.
And my flatmate's really, you know, the windows cannot be open when we're not in the flat, and really careful about that kind of stuff.
Again, I'd say... Obviously, it does depend where you are, but I would just be careful anywhere. I mean, where my boyfriend stays, he's just moved into a ground floor flat. And when he was moving in, I went in one day and he was unpacking his bags. And his windows, unfortunately, you can't hold them open.
Oh,
you have to wedge them with something. And he had the DVD sitting and like holding his window open. It's like anyone walking past would just, you know, just grab that.
Take it.
I lived in a ground floor flat for 16 years when I lived in Govan. And that's one thing I'd say about them. I'm not worried about my boyfriend living. He's living in a really nice area of York Hill. It's like, it is nice.
Yeah.
You can tell that there's no...
Well,
like,
York is mainly like medical.
Yeah, he's just right down from the hospital. He's staying right across and across from the museum. But when we stayed in Govan, we lived in a ground floor flat, and we did have our windows panned in quite a few times. It's just it's too easy. We're broken into as well. By our neighbours, which is charming.
Lovely. It's always nice to know who's living next door.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So far.
You ask them to look after your house when you go on holiday and they rob it.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, we were getting kind of annoyed with our downstairs neighbour because he works night shifts and he's in the Sunday Times wine club. So we keep getting, like, he leaves for work about 5 o'clock, so it's not really a night shift, but we keep getting his, like, big deliveries of wine when he's sleeping during the day.
Excellent.
Like, I know, we're thinking of, like, taxing him a bottle per case
I'd
for keeping his time.
But, see, we don't mind looking after your wine for you.
We don't mind looking
this
after
is
your wine,
fair.
But now your wine's going to have to look after us. We're going to keep some of it. But apart from that, we've been quite lucky with our neighbours. There's a couple across from us who are quite nice. The guy upstairs is a little bit odd, but he's quiet. So
that's the thing. I take it it's a private landlord you're renting from.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just such a mix of people. You just there's no patterns of who your neighbours might be, you know. Some of them would just
really
be other students.
With my flatmate, because I hadn't met her before I moved in.
Oh.
But we've been getting on really well.
It's always risky.
It is, and I was really worried about it because my first year in halls just none of us really got on.
Did you not?
And it became quite...
I've heard that story quite a lot.
Unpleasant.
How many people did you have to live with?
Including Margaret, it's 5 people sharing one kitchen.
Oh, right. That's not too bad.
No, although I've heard some people say that they think Murano Street's better because when you've got like 10 or 15 people, there's more chance that, you know, at least a couple of people you'll get on with.
Yeah.
And that Queen Margaret, if 2 people dislike each other, the whole flat becomes...
Tension.
Yeah, there's a really bad atmosphere in the flat and
yeah.
It's not ideal. Second year was really good though. So.
I can see the up and down side to both situations.
Yeah.
And the girl that I was friends with when I was here the first time, who lived in Murano Street,
mm-hmm.
I think her flat, for the most part, they all got on really, really well. But as you say, there was like the occasional like run-in, but
yeah.
It was never a big deal because there was enough people there to kind of diffuse it,
mm-hmm.
You know, or you could at least just pretend it wasn't happening because there's
yeah.
enough people. Whereas if there's 5 people, especially if most of them are women, I think it's going to end. It ends up that sort of, whose side
it,
are you on?
The all-girl flat. There was one of my friends from home, Heather, was in this all-girls flat, and basically most rooms at Queen Margaret are the same size, but there are a few kind of bay window rooms, and for some reason they decided that these rooms don't cost anymore, and that they're, even though they're like twice the size,
right.
And that they're apportioned like totally randomly. And of course she ended up with this room and was really chuffed about it,
mm-hmm.
for like 2 days, and then kind of realised that her flatmates were all incredibly envious, and the fact that she was paying the same rent and getting twice as much space and everything. So she didn't have a very fun time the rest of that year.
So it was all girls?
It was all girls, yeah. Which she had, like, at Queen Margaret you can request sort of all male or female or mixed.
Oh, right.
And just what you've said, because all girl environments can be a bit bitchy.
As much as it pains me to admit it, it's true.
Yeah.
It is true.
But then the converse of that is that there was an all boys flat above from us in first year, and apparently at the end of the year there was like maggots and infestations and...
Yes.
So it can be bitchy
easy
and clean, or it can be friendly and infested, and bitchy and clean is probably better.
Yeah, probably. I wonder how the mixed situation would go then. You'd probably just have...
The mixed flats, I think, there is, in some ways, a bit less
girls going
tension.
Mental because they have to clean up after the boys.
After the boys, yeah. But then
that's
you can
one
get
thing,
them to
I think
take out the bins and stuff.
I've never lived in that situation, even just flat sharing with friends. I've only ever lived with my boyfriend or in my parents'
yeah.
home. And know that it would drive me absolutely mental if people didn't clean up after themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad enough if you're living with someone you love and they're not washing their dishes, you know
yeah.
that. But living with a bunch of strangers, leaving their dirty stuff lying around, would think
it'd
just
be less inclined to give them any kind of leeway.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if your boyfriend's had a bad day at work or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and you know he doesn't want to come home and do the dishes, and that's fair enough. But just complete strangers, you feel, are kind of taking advantage, I suppose, more.
Yeah. Well, I know myself that if I was sharing a kitchen with a bunch of strangers, that there's no way I would leave it in a mess for them, so I would only
expect them to be courteous to you as well.
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, I'm much cleaner in my work than I am at home. You know, we're much more thorough about cleaning,
mm-hmm.
because it's my job,
it's
you know,
food,
and it's we're serving food and drink, and it really, really annoys me when other people don't do their share of cleaning when
yeah.
I'm at work. At home, it annoys me as long as it doesn't get to ridiculous stages, you know. People, they're at home,
is
so they can
you
get
your dad?
It's me, my dad, and my wee brother.
All right, how's your wee brother?
He's going to be 22 in a couple of weeks.
So not really like your wee brother, but
yeah. He is my wee brother, but no.
He's your wee brother.
He's my big wee brother.
Yeah.
I was trying to convince him to come to uni at the same time I was coming back, but he's just not sure about what he wants to do.
Has he, like, started a course before? Or?
He was at college doing an outdoor course, outdoor
yeah.
pursuits.
What
he's quite active.
Yeah, because my cousin's it used to be building and printing, and now it's the Met, I think, the Glasgow Met.
Oh, right.
They kind of merged building and printing with food tech and stuff. So.
No, he was at one in Somerston. I can't remember what it's called. That's terrible. I bet it's just called Somerston College. I don't think
probably.
It is, actually. But it's I can't remember the name of it, but it was in Somerston. And he enjoyed it, but he's just sort of languishing at the moment. I don't know what he's going to do. He's
yeah.
like, whenever I'm studying philosophy at the moment, and whenever I sort of tell him things that I've been learning about, he's always really interested in it.
Yeah.
And we end up having like really like good conversations. I think that he would really enjoy studying something like that. But I think maybe he's got this idea, unlike me, that I just want to study things that I enjoy studying for their own sake and then just
yeah.
see what happens. But I think he would much rather know exactly where it's going to take him.
Yeah.
You know, like have a career in mind first and then do whatever you need to do to go about that. But I think that you should just study things that he enjoys, just for its own sake. I think that a lot of the time people make the mistake of doing what they think they ought to rather than...
It is quite hard to decide which way, you know, which way round to see it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't think anyone really wants to go into something that they know there's no future in.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, people come here and start doing law or accountancy because they think, okay, there's good money in it and it's quite a definite career path.
Yeah, definitely.
And then realise that they can't stand it and they've, you know, they've then spent maybe 2 years learning accountancy and what they actually want to do is, you know, train dolphins or something. Well, not train dolphins, but they actually want to do something radically different.
Yeah.
And, you know, their time in accountancy has not been tremendously useful.
I suppose it's true that you do need at least a rough idea. I mean, at least I know that whatever I do want to end up doing, that it will involve language, you know, like if everything goes well for me, I'll do honours, English language and German, and even if I don't know exactly what I'll do with it, I know that I'll be working in those fields. Mm. But it's funny, I was watching TV the other night and I was watching, have you ever seen That 70s Show?
Yeah, once or twice.
And the girl in that was telling her dad that she had decided to major in philosophy, and her brother joked, oh, that's handy because they've just opened that big philosophy factory down the road. They're thinking, oh...
Yeah, like that other joke, how often do you look in the newspaper and see philosopher wanted?
I know. But it's, I suppose there's a reason why it's a prerequisite for the general humanities, because it gives you handy skills.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating, philosophy. It's like, it's, I find it really, really interesting, but it's really annoying as well, because it's sort of, you can't, you know, the way that you sort of talk and reason with each other in your day-to-day life, you just allow things to be assumed and implied,
And you then
just
you can't start do that digging at everything. And
you know, it's like having to spell out things that you really shouldn't have to.
What
know
kind of stuff do you have to,
like, at the moment we've been studying the Descartes Cogito Ergo Sum,
I think therefore I am,
and it's like, just I think therefore I am, I mean, if you're thinking, of course you are, you know, but you're not allowed to just say, oh, well, as I know, that's obvious, it follows on from it, like, implicitly. You have to sort of break it down and
really
explain
it.
And you're like, I find it really frustrating. I do enjoy it at the same time, but I just find myself shaking my head, like, this is nonsense.
I was quite lucky because I did politics for my first 2 years, and there you do study a lot of people who are considered philosophers, like Thomas Hobbes, but you're not studying them from that very basic level. You've kind of, you know, you've accepted that they are human beings and that society must be organised in some way. So you sort of skip the really difficult stuff and get straight to, you know, voting systems and things, which in some ways makes it easier.
Yeah. I mean, I don't dislike it in any way. I just, I'm actually really enjoying it, but I just find that, well, I suppose that's the whole point. The whole point is to ask questions that might on the surface seem like they don't really need asked, but the suggestion that you could be deceived into believing that you exist, I just find ridiculous, because how can you believe anything if you don't exist?
It's like, I think it was Wittgenstein and the stuff about, is this a table, and how do you know that this is a table, and he eventually ended up kind of almost losing his own mind through his obsession with how do I know that this is, and how do I know that this isn't some kind of fantasy. And
I think quite a lot of the sort of core questions that come up in philosophy are a lot of the issues that drive people crazy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised to find lots of people all over the world locked up because they can't stop thinking about these exact things.
We couldn't stop thinking about the meaning of life.
Yeah.
I was on YouTube last night and I was watching like this Richard Dawkins, like the atheist, well, he's not just an atheist,
just
he's a professor. The God Delusion.
Yeah.
I really want to buy that, but it's only in hardback just now, and therefore can't afford it.
Oh yeah, I think I got it just when the loan came in. I think it was about £16-17.
Yeah, I've read The Selfish Gene. I didn't understand The Selfish Gene, but I've read it. But yeah, I do really want to read that one because
I watched his documentary, but
The Root of All Evil.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I actually bought the book for my brother, but I plan to read it when he's finished it.
Yeah,
my brother is quite passionate about these things.
Is he? Like toward the Dawkins side of it, or is he?
He just, I don't know, whereas I think a lot of people might agree with the points that he makes, they don't feel quite so militantly about it. Like, but my brother thinks
really
that it's really, really important for people to turn their backs on religion.
He's really, Dawkins himself, compared to The Root of All Evil, where he was basically frothing at the mouth a lot of the time. He gave an interview in Newsnight and he had really toned it down, and I kind of wonder if he's making, like, if someone's told him, look, people are persuaded by your points, but your manner's really off-putting.
Mm-hmm.
And he really was very calm and doing the more avuncular, kindly professor. I don't know how much of that's an act, but there was a radical change between The Root of All Evil and, like, the stuff he's doing to promote the book.
And you can see why you get so emotional.
I mean, oh, definitely, but...
But at the same time, when, you know, you're trying to persuade someone of something and... You can't. Your mannerism is so important. You can't just come across so brutal, because even if people would agree with the things you're saying, if your manner is harsh, they just won't listen to you. You know, their defences will come up automatically, and the things that you're saying just won't get through.
Yeah. I don't know. He said the interview I saw anyway that the aim he has for the new book is that it'll sort of that he knows there are some people who can't be persuaded, one way or another, but that. He hopes that people who are sort of in the middle will read it and will kind of... And, you know, stuff about how you define God as well, and that lots of people misinterpret, you know, some of Einstein's writings and Stephen Hawking writing, then we shall know the face of God, as being a statement of religious belief, and they're actually using God as a shorthand for sort of physics and the laws of the universe and things that are unchanging, and not this personal just
creation
being.
Creation itself.
Yeah. Just existence rather than...
No, definitely.
An interventionist deity of some kind.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's important that, you know, people, especially if they are religious or even very deeply religious, that, you know, you should read things like that because they should be aware of the questions.
Yeah.
And I always find it quite surprising when people get offended if you ask them a question about their religion, and I always think, well, surely this is a question you should have asked yourself a long time ago, you know, before deciding that you subscribe to this, you should have asked yourself all these questions.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to have faith in the sense of making those final wee leaps that you can't have the answers for, but it shouldn't just be one big massive leap. You haven't even tried to figure out any of the answers. You're just going to say, right, okay, this is what I believe all the way. I think that they should have at least been able to answer some questions up to a point, and fair enough, even if there is wee gaps that need bridged by pure faith, then that's up to them. But you should always be able to speak to people about these things. I find it quite... It's quite sad when... Because I know people that are like that, that are, you know, I'm a Christian, or, you know, I'm devoutly religious, and if you try and ask them a question about it, they just get offended.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm asking you is not offensive. I'm just curious. That idea that,
you know, any kind of... Not even necessarily an outright challenge to the religion, but any kind of... querying of any part of it, or even asking, well, how do you explain, you know, this scientific factor, how do you explain these things that are wrong with the world, and that becomes, oh, that's offensive to me, and it just, why? Just, you know, I mean,
I know, no, totally. Because I was speaking to a girl at a party one time, and she was a born-again Christian, and she had, well, it's obvious that she'd been through some pretty bad things, and this was her, almost like a crutch, you know, which, while I was speaking to her and I was asking her questions, I wasn't trying to talk her out of it or to point out how she was wrong. All I was telling her was that I don't believe these things, that, you know, she would maybe say one thing and I'd be like, I just, you know, no offence, the bottom line is I just don't buy that.
Yeah.
You know, and she didn't buy it either. It was just like, well, just, I don't know, it's a comfort thing, and I can't argue with people
to challenge it when it's something that someone really, especially with older people, when it's something they really rely on, it's quite hard to, I mean, my grandparents are very religious, and whereas if a younger person said some of the things they say, I would probably, you know, at least question it a little. With them, I just don't, because if they take some kind of comfort in it, then...
Yeah.
You know?
No, I see what you mean, that's... What's the point?
Yeah.
You know, what's the point in taking their...
It's not doing anybody any damage. So, and, you know, people find comfort in different things, and in the same way that you don't, like, see smokers and, like, pull their fags off them or anything.
Yeah.
Well, as much as you might want to. Yeah, as much as you might feel like it. I mean, as long as there's no sort of flammable substances around, you probably just leave them to it.
Yeah.